Hey folks, it's been a long day. Doesn't it feel like that? It just never ends. It's always work, work, work. And I'm tired. Yeah, take a look at these eyes. Pretty damn tired. So, trying to be an influencer? An influencer of what? Many of us dream about being an influencer, social media. We want to influence things. We want to be good leaders. Are leaders born? Can we be leaders, all of us? Or, you know, like I said, is it something that you're born with or can it be taught? Well, today's guest is Paul Lawrence Vann, and he's going to talk about all this stuff. And we're going to talk about wealth building. We're going to talk about leadership. We're going to talk about influence, influencer, influencing. But when it comes right down to talking about, you know, wealth building, it's not necessarily about money, how much money you have. There's more to wealth than money in the pocket. So please sit back, enjoy this conversation between myself and Mr. Vann. And remember, if you are a pet owner, please be responsible and have your pets spayed or neutered. All right, let's go. You definitely seem like you're an influencer, and I want to know where and how that got put.
Oh, you're gonna be. It's just gonna blow you away. I'm telling you. I'm one of 10 kids. See.
Ooh, me.
So you know I know how to communicate.
Oh yeah.
And I'm the second oldest child, but the oldest son, right? So I've kind of like seen it all. My older sister and I helped raising our siblings. Our parents were factory workers and everything. And so at the age of 10, my parents said, well, hey, we're going to start a grocery store. I was, yeah. And then they said, oh, after school, you'll open it up and you'll run it. Wait a minute. Hold on. And Chuck, I was an unpaid intern for 5 years. Never got paid, right?
Oh, geez.
I got paid in experience.
I would be jumping into the food cupboards all the time.
Oh, my God. I'm there.
Well, Mr. Paul Lawrence Vann, take it away. Let us know about your current book that you have out there. And I want to know, aside from the book, really, what is this, you know, leader of influence? We hear that word influencer a lot, but a lot of people associate that with the social media influencer. And I want to be one of those guys that's just sitting back saying, is that what you mean? So can you talk about this book?
Well, first of all, Chuck, thank you for inviting me to your amazing show. And the book is my third solo book, Leadership as Influence, Three-Pronged Approach to Becoming a Leader of Influence. And the reason why influence is so important is because that's where the decisions are made. The decision is made to communicate with, as an example, a manager who's on your staff and an employee as well. And when the leader with the title, the president, executive vice president, if you have a nonprofit, the executive director, if they are open to developing the other leaders on their staff, then they would actually be able to realize their vision, the mission and goals and expectations that they have as the leader with the title. And the reason why influence is so important is because you're able to persuade people to do things, even if they don't want to do it, Chuck. And we know a lot of times people don't want to do things, but if you can influence them to the position of saying, I'm going to do this for the betterment of our team, our organization, then you can maximize that human potential. And by having a leader with the title, develop other leaders through leadership development workshops, you want to develop them as a leader as well, because in essence, they are a leader. Manager manages the workflow for an organization and they are a leader.
Yeah.
But this is what most people don't understand, Chuck, is that employees are leaders too. For example, if they're on assembly line and they're developing widgets, as an example, if you don't have that employee in place, then your revenue is going to go down, your business performance is going to go down, and that vision, that mission, goals and expectation will not be realized. So an employee is a leader as well, but no one has ever told that employee they were a leader, but they are.
Yeah, you know, you're right, because a lot of times meaning even from early years, we're taught, well, there's a leader and then you're the follower.
It's correct.
So they were always saying there's that one leader and you follow, but
right,
you're right where you say each one of us really are leaders.
Yes. And when we look at individuals and you said, okay, you have a son, you have a daughter, cousin, and you say, well, are they leaders? Absolutely. Why are they leaders? How are they leaders? Everyone has to lead their life. Mm-hmm. Once we come into that consciousness of our lives, we have to lead it. And that takes into account being able to make good decisions, being able to have the initiative. If a person wants to when I had to purchase my first car, I had to work. I did not wait around for someone to give me anything. I worked. I got a job, got a car, got my first apartment. I worked. So when I was in college for 4 years, my parents, of course, being one of 10 children, they never gave me a penny to go to college, and I didn't expect them to. So I got a job and worked for 4 years at UPS. I worked the entire 4 years. And then at the junior year of college, I was offered the opportunity to go to basic training in Dover, Delaware for the Air Force. And I said, oh, I'll go, but I won't join. That's really not my thing, right? Military is not my thing. But I went because I would be paid the same amount of money had I stayed at UPS in basic training. So I mosey on up, take the trailway bus up to Dover, Delaware. Never flown on a plane before. 3 weeks into the six-week encampment, they put us on a C-5, which is the length of a football field. You could put tanks in there, jets in there, 90 personnel. We flew over Bermuda. That was my first flight. 2 weeks later, Chuck, okay, we're getting back on the C-5. We're flying to Columbus, Mississippi. We're going to have what's called flight orientation, Paul. What is that? We put on the helmet, the oxygen mask, the flight suit, and they put us in a two-seat aircraft, an Air Force jet with an instructor pilot. And they take us up 10,000 feet, and they give us the stick, which is like the steering wheel in a car. And they allow us to fly this jet. And then the instructor pilot took the stick back, and he started doing wheelbarrow. So he would fly right side up, upside down, right side up. So he asked me, Chuck, he said, Paul, how are you doing? I can't breathe. But once we landed, I was hooked at that point. I knew that I was going to join the Air Force. And so I made, as an individual, a leadership decision through that experience. And it's been that way. And I served 20 years in the United States Air Force as a military officer.
Wow. Well, thank you for the service.
It was so much fun. I don't even know if y'all should thank me because I had so much fun. Chuck, you know, in life, one of the things that we have that we love is to be able to be ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the Air Force allowed me to be myself. And people thought, well, you know, you're taking orders, you know, you're marching like a soldier. I said, that's TV and movies. In real life, just like this interview we're talking, that's exactly how my life was for 20 years in the Air Force. People allowed me to be me.
Wow.
And for that, I'm so thankful. Absolutely.
It's you've had an amazing life, I bet, thus far, and plenty yes. more years to go. So part of this on your book about leadership and influence. So, you know, a lot of times, or at least in the past, you used to hear people say we don't need friends to influence, or you don't need to be a friend to influence something. But it seems like to me, kind of like if the person likes you, you can influence them to do things. And hopefully you're not influencing them to do negative things. But is that personality a key to this leadership and influencing people? Is your personality a key component?
Well, I believe in it. What a great question, Chuck, is that when we look at it, let's say, for example, on that friend level, mm-hmm. and they have an influence on them, their hope is that everyone would positively influence someone, encourage people, inspire people, motivate and empower. And it's so important. It's totally different than social media influencer. That's more of a marketing and that's more of a slight type business arrangement. But when it comes to influencing someone, it's getting them to see that we're on this team. Even as individuals, you're my friend, I'm your friend. We want to be going into the same direction. In other words, a negative person would dissuade a person if they're thinking about attending college. They say, oh, that's not you. That's not, you're not that guy. You're not that young lady. But you want to have someone say, you know, you may not have the money to attend college, but there's a way to do it, and I'm going to show you. For example, I had a nephew who called me up, and he was interested in joining the Air Force as an officer. He had just graduated from college. So I took him through the what I call the process of understanding how to get in. Now that you have this degree, it gives you a competitive advantage. So I'm influencing him from a positive standpoint, giving him a lot of options. Now, if the first option that you want doesn't work, which means you want to be a second lieutenant like I was when I joined the Air Force, you can also go to the Air Force as a civilian, as a federal employee. You can do that too. I want to give you a backup plan just in case the first one doesn't work out. Because with the military, you have to meet certain requirements. You have to have the age requirement, the academic requirement. You have to have the weight requirement. And you also have to have the citizenship requirement. So there are a number of things that people have to have in order to do that, especially for the younger folks. And so I would say the difference between a social media influencer is a person who can help one to move their brand along, sell products, or point them to the book they want to sell, something of that nature. But life influencer is someone that may have lost their way in life, and you say, hey, maybe what you want to do is enhance your spiritual life.
Yeah.
Help you better understand. Or if you have a health problem, I want to influence you to go with me to the gym. And I'm going to slowly take 6 weeks with you, and I'm going to show you how to get into top conditioning and get your health together. And then I can influence someone by saying, you don't have to make a lot of money to become wealthy. You really don't. But what you have to do is you have to be disciplined, you have to be focused and committed to the process. If you're in your 20s, and by the time you're in your 60s, you should be a millionaire. If you do the right things,
no.
Compound interest. Compound. Because I'm the same way as you, Chuck. I blew my chance to become a millionaire starting at 20. But what I learned later on was I needed a new car. I didn't get a fancy car when I first joined the Air Force. I ended up getting a Toyota Corolla without air conditioning, Chuck. What was I thinking? But I'm just using this as an example. Perhaps I could have just fixed the hoopty. Maybe I should have just fixed my hoopty up. But I went on and got a new car, so there were car payments. I kind of deferred buying my first house. After 8 years in the military, I left, and I went to Mobil Oil Company, and I bought my first house. So at that point, I started building wealth. The house was helping me to leverage that. And once I got a recall back into the Air Force, I leased that house out, rented that house out to people for 12 years. So I was building wealth. I had ownership of it, even though I wasn't living in it. So I bought another house. And that's kind of how I got it going. And so those were influences by people who were into the wealth building area. And I learned from them how to be able to do that.
So before we jump into really your wealth building academy and topic on that, I just want folks to know that your current book, Leadership is Influence, A Three-Pronged Approach to Becoming a Leader of Influence, is available on at Barnes & Noble,
Amazon.
Yeah.
I also have it on the website as well.
Right. Yeah. And in fact, with your website, you are loaded with social media. We have it all in the notes here so folks can find you. Sure. But you're talking about wealth and wealth building. And like we said at the top of the hour, you are the founder and president of Wealth Building, the Wealth Building Academy. So I'm curious, when we hear wealth, that keyword wealth, and we hear wealth building, we think about, oh, that's going to make me rich. I'm going to be rich. Mm-hmm. Are we talking rich? Or are we talking really being smart with your money? Because wealth, I think, to each individual is a different thing. So what is wealth?
I love what you just said, Chuck, because everyone has a different definition for wealth. They have a different definition for success. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I looked at when I came up with the word wealth, and just like with my podcast, wealth is more than just money. And I came up with that title because it's in the thing of mind, body, spirit. And we have finances. No one wants to be poor, but we want to be able to manage our finances. So my Wealth Building Academy LLC is a leadership consultancy company. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is we work with people to show them different ways in which they can be wealthy, not only financially, but be wealthy in their whole life relationships. I mean, if we looked at the divorce rates, that's an area we can work on all day, whether you're married or just dating.
Yeah.
We can look at the contributions we make to the local community. So I was a very brave soul, Chuck, and I just decided, and I was elected board president of the PTA for my children's school. What was I thinking? I did it for 2 years, Chuck. And I tell you, it got the best of me, but I learned from that process. But I wanted to show my children that I was really interested not only in their academic achievement, but also in the other students as well. And I was the first PTA president at the new school on Joint Base Andrews. And I did that for 2 years. We raised $25,000 the first year and $25,000 the second year. And we started with no money. I took $100 out of my pocket. I got one of my military colleagues who was a chef, and we cooked lunch for the entire school, And that showed people that this thing can work. And so the next thing you know, we brought in the Tuskegee Airmen to speak. We brought in bullying specialists to speak. The officer who escorts the president to the Air Force One, we had him, the base commander, come to speak. And so many other people. And so that's part of wealth. By helping other people is also a part of wealth building when you build communities. And so that's really what Wealth Building Academy is really all about. And I volunteered to work for the former government of Maryland. And we instituted financial literacy programs in the high school. We had a Senate bill that was passed by the Maryland legislature. So I went and I advocated to different members of Congress and the Maryland legislature, and they put that into the bill, the Maryland bill, and students would learn financial literacy in school. It had to be an elective. And I found out 2 years ago that now it's mandatory for students to have financial literacy course before they can graduate.
That should be someplace, that should be something that's put into place across the board in
absolutely education. Absolutely.
You know, listening to you explain everything and talk about how you've gone through your life thus far, it really seems like that influence and wealth, all that really intersect. They're all one thing, because I was going to ask you, and maybe I'm going to throw this out there as a comment slash question, is what really differentiates personal, business, and financial life? Because nowadays it just seems like everything's just all thrown into one. Is it all pretty much one big ball, or is there separation between those things, personal, business, and financial life?
Yeah, they're an intersection, because we know, especially in today's economy and in today's society, even globally, that we can do more when we have money, when we have financial resources. We can purchase food, get insurance, get a vehicle for transportation. A lot of times we need that. We can have some entertainment. And I think it's great that we can go out on a trip and just let our hair down. And you can tell, Chuck, that I've really let my hair down.
You and me.
See? We know it works. We need to let our hair down, right?
Yeah.
And so when I look at it, we have a life to live, but money is a part of it, and it has to be, because we can't get things done. We can get more done with money than we can without it. Absolutely. And so I think they're both interwoven. When I look at my particular lifestyle compared to my parents, I mentioned earlier that I worked at UPS for 4 years. Well, I was working part-time, and I was earning more part-time than my father made full-time working at the factory he worked at. And that's the difference in the generations. Because when he came up, gas was maybe 20, 25 cents per gallon. Mm-hmm. Whereas not that way anymore. Nope. And then when we look at food, we need money, we have to buy food. It's hard to work and concentrate if you're hungry. And we're finding that happening to a lot of schools. So part, when I was PTA, we would take some of the fundraising money, we would provide and pay for the lunch for the students who were parents who couldn't afford to pay for their lunch. And so we're still doing things. But yes, money, they're interwoven into what we do. Even though I've been retired from the Air Force for 21 years, I would be receive a pension from the Air Force till the day I transfer, when I expire. So I did the hard work early, and now I can do the things that I want to do.
Now, that's something that, I'll say I made the mistake, not doing that. But I think, and you had mentioned and we talked about having financial education for students, and I think especially earlier on, not kindergarten, third grade, that kind of stuff, but at least starting in maybe junior high, but definitely high school. But it's so important. And you said that word before, compounding interest and things like that. Yes. So that is financial wealth building. If you learn about that, you get more money, and it's the best thing to do. I want to ask you something, Paul, that's going to sound maybe crazy, but do you think that receiving all that stimulus money, that free money, hurt a lot of individuals? I mean, it helped, but do you also think that it hurt people?
Great question. And I've had this conversation with people before. I talked to my brother. He was also Army. Lieutenant Colonel when he retired, and he asked me about that. And I said, well, it depends on who the individual is. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, even now, people are thinking, well, President Trump gave us a stimulus check, but he didn't, because a president cannot appropriate money. It's Congress who does that. And of course, I worked on Capitol Hill. So it's the Congress that voted for that money. In fact, it was Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi, who was the Speaker of the House at the time, who approved that, and then they were able to get it through the Senate as well, through Senator McConnell. So I would say, for some people, I use the example of a person that it helped. I know of a young lady, and she took the stimulus money that she had, the $1,200 one time, and maybe another $1,500 another, depending on how many family members she had. And she ended up investing in a business. And her business now is worth probably $5 million.
Woo.
So she applied her money properly.
Yeah.
Some people may have gotten the money, and that's not everyone. And they really needed that money to pay the utilities, keep the lights on, get food for their children, because they probably lost their job during the pandemic. And then we had the middle group, and they primarily got a new car. They went in more debt. They were buying things that did not appreciate. They bought things that depreciated. And so I think it depends on who the individual was. But I love to use example of the lady who used hers to start a business.
Right.
And I think today her business is probably doubled or tripled that now.
Yeah, the reason I asked that question is exactly like you said, those in the middle, because I think we as American citizens, lot of us become complacent. It's like, okay, I'm getting some free money. And then rather than, like you said, put it towards a useful thing or things that appreciate or save, we say, hey, that's extra money. It's free money. I'm going to spend it. We buy cars, whatever else. But then we come back to this where now you got to go, you're not getting that money. Sure. And you're going, how do I make ends meet? How do I make my $900 car payment? How do I do that? I don't have that money anymore. That's why I asked that question, because
I think that when we look at it, and I know you just stated that free money, it's not free. And I'll explain it, how Congress works and how the finances is that now there are, of course, discussions on, we looked at the high price of gas. And there are a lot of factors in gas, why it's high. Of course, in the Middle East, they stopped the production amount. They lowered the production amount, which meant the demand was still going up. And because the production amount was lower, they could charge more. Mm-hmm. Because the per barrel. And I worked for Mobil Oil Company in oil and gas, so I know that. And so we know the price of food went up during the pandemic. Yes. It was harder to get it. The shipping lanes were a little bit clogged up there in the ports in California, New York, and other places around the world. And those things all factored in. And we noticed, Chuck, that the price of things really haven't gone down, even though the pandemic is maybe about 2 years removed. And the interesting thing is that I'm observing it's not going to ever go down.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You keep it up there and you put it in everybody's minds. Well, that's the price I got to pay. We'll complain, but right. Then just get used to it. Just like everything else, we get used to it.
Absolutely. And so when we look at it, when people, they're coming up short, I think a lot of people coming up short primarily because they could not have had the assumption that we'll continue to get it. Because when you file those taxes, they still ask you that you receive the money. And they're asking that question because they know that at some point in time, probably after the 2024 election, that taxes are going up. They're going up. Because you cannot pay off the debt. But I think the problem they ran into was the 2017 legislation that was put in there by the Trump administration. And I'm not making this political. I'm just saying the administration, they put in a big tax cuts for corporations and wealthy people. And so wealthy people are paying a less percentage than they should. And so the burden has fallen down on the middle class and the poor people. They need to really increase the taxes on the wealthy, those making what they're saying is $450,000 and above per year. So we're going up into the billions. And unless they do that, for the middle class and for the poor people, it will continue to increase the taxes.
So what can Wealth Building Academy help with people set their mindset on what they or what we, what I need to do to help me financially?
Well, and I've talked to a lot of Wall Street types. I've interviewed tons of people from Wall Street, financial experts from all over the world. And I think what we just simply have to do is just come to an assessment of where we are today financially. Mm-hmm. Look at where we are, our assets and our debts. And I would say, don't walk, but run to pay off as much debt as you can, if you can. Because once you don't owe any debt, maybe not the house, or maybe depending on the price of the car, but the small things, getting rid of subscriptions to streaming services and magazines that you don't really use, but you're being charged every month. That's a good place to start. Then come up with a budget. No one wants to talk about a budget, Chuck.
Yeah, right? No one at all.
Chuck, I'm a budget expert, certified through Department of Defense, financial manager, level 3, which is about as high as you can go. And people just don't want to talk about, oh, that's boring, that's dull. It's boring and dull until you about to file for bankruptcy. So I would say people have to get a budget, and they're just going to have to say no to themselves a little bit more. And they're going to have to, if they have children, they're going to have to say a little bit no to them on anything extra until you get their level footing. And what I would recommend people do if they really want to create some wealth is to get them a whole life insurance policy that pays premiums. In other words, you get a whole life insurance policy, and there are only certain companies that sell them. It's not an average insurance agent is not even aware of it. But you can do what they call become your own bank. And the reason why you say you get this insurance company policy rather is because you pay maybe $10,000 a year or more depending on how much you get. I'll use an example. If you pay $10,000 a year, you might have a policy that maxes out at $800,000 over 100 years. But as you put this money in, you get interest a minimum of 4%, which is much more than you got from a bank over the last 3 or 4 years. And if you needed a loan, you can actually go into that policy and get a loan off the money you have in there. And you can pay it back. And then there's a death benefit. So whoever gets the insurance policy on, if they were to expire, then you would be able to get all that money out. And we know with insurance, that's all tax-free.
So what type of insurance was this called again?
It's a whole life insurance policy.
Whole life insurance policy. Yeah, so everybody that's listening, and if you're watching right now, that is something really to look into. I mean, especially if you're drawing interest out of it. It's like you said, it's like your own personal bank, kind of.
Right. And what the qualifications are, first of all, the person that you're getting the policy on, let's say if it's your son or daughter, they have to be in good health. If they're not in good health, the policy would not be approved. And or you can get it on yourself. You have to be in good health. You have to, they actually send someone to your house. You get a physical exam, blood work, look at any pre-existing conditions, any family history, and they'll issue you this policy. And so annually, you pay this amount annually. And over the years, after 5 years, it really starts to build. And then from there on into the life of the policy. And let's say if a person were to go to through a divorce, well, the courts can't ask for your insurance policy. You know, everything is tax-free. If a person expires, if you get the premium and you have turned in a death certificate and you let them know where the person has expired, you get the insurance money, that's not taxable. And this has been going on for over 200 years because of this type of insurance policy originated out of Europe years ago. And that's how a lot of people got rich. That's not all, Chuck. Banks have them. Insurance company has these policies. And now individuals can get them. So if you look at a typical insurance company in a major city, let's say if we looked at Seattle, typically the tallest building in that city is either going to be a bank or an insurance company. And maybe a real estate company, depending on who it is. And they're that way for a reason, because they have these insurance policies. And they might have a CEO in there who would not take a salary, but he would take the insurance policy. See? Professional athletes get them.
Wow. See?
So these are things that they don't teach in school. And I learned it a little bit late in life, but now that I've learned it, game on.
You're going to use it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So I think that would be a great way. But I think for people today, we know that 2024 is going to be a tough year, even financially. And the reason why is because it's an election year. And what an election year means is not a lot of legislation is actually going to get brought to the floor for votes by both bipartisan different parties. And things are going to drag out until about November 2024, and whoever is elected at that point is when they'll start legislating again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have to, so we want to let listeners know that you need to start preparing and just tighten up your budget. Start a budget and then tighten that budget up. And you don't have to eat beans and rice every day, but what you can do are noodles. But what you can do is just be a little bit more focused in on maybe getting better quality of food instead of the fast food, because it's better for your body. So we can discount the health aspects. If you're eating good, typically you're going to be in better health. So there's a lot of different things such as that. And we have to get away from the stress, because we have the diabetes, the high blood pressure. We have joints, you know, stiff joints and everything, arthritis. And we have to put ourselves in a state of mind where we are a temple. Chuck is a temple. Paul is a temple. And everyone we know is a temple. And in order to maintain a temple, we have to take care of it, our person.
Wow. Paul, you not only are you an author, you're a Wealth Building Academy president, founder, you're a nutritionist.
Oh, yes.
You know, the one thing that you really said that as far as nutrition goes, I'll say nutrition, life, health, longevity, influence, wealth, all of that is invest in that better food because you intake it into your body. And, you know, garbage in, garbage out kind of thing. We've heard that. So if you take in bad food, you're going to be spending just as much just buying all this crappy food. But if you treat your body good, your health is going to be good. You could go out there and get a whole life insurance because you're going to pass because you're in good health. And I think if you take in the good foods and then on those lean days or weeks, you're not going to be starving or hurting for food because your body is already strong from good food.
Exactly. I've been through just a host of medical exams this year. I had a couple of medical procedures, in fact, that I was not anticipating. And I just had Monday of this week, I just had my last exam for the year. I went through an orthopedic surgeon, and he said, well, Paul, you're good to go. When 2024 gets here, you're going to be starting 100%. So just take care of yourself. And the reason why I want to share that with people is because, you know, we always have these New Year's resolutions. One thing people always say, I'm going to lose some weight. I'm going to go on a diet, la-da-da-da-da. And I said, don't do that. That's bad for you. Dieting is bad for you. It's not healthy. I'm following this thing called the Blue Zone diet. All right, not so much diet, but meal plans. So it takes into account eating beans, whole grains, not eating fast food, no sodas. It's just eating healthy. And then you don't have to go to the gym and lift 300 pounds like I used to, or squat 500 with your legs like I used to in high school. You just, your normal day, you don't even have to walk a mile. Just go out 15, 20 minutes a day, get some fresh air, get some vitamin D from the sun, drink plenty of water, stay hydrated, take a nap, have friends. You need friends. Not only your family, but you need friends and converse with your friends. And if you have friends, you're eating the same type of foods. And that's what people are doing in these Blue Zone areas. Loma Linda, California, happens to be one area they do it in. I think they follow the Seventh-day Adventists, their type of meal plans. And then people in Okinawa, Japan, they follow that program. People in Ikara, Greece follow this program. In Costa Rica, they follow the program. And then also in Italy, they follow this program. And what I'm talking about, what I mean by this program, the Blue Zone is people who live to be 100, centenarians.
Right.
And what they found out is in Okinawa, they brought the fast food restaurants in there, and the next generation health is going down because of the fast food, whereas people are growing their own food in those countries. You know, one guy... One guy's 90, and he's still a rodeo, right? He's herding cows and everything. But it's, those things are in Italy. You can imagine the cobblestone streets and people walking up. They're just walking up this every day, going to the market, coming back. And that's their exercise. And they live to be 100.
You know what's interesting, though? North America, here we are, and a lot of people have heard the Blue Zone, but we associate it with another country. But then you go, Loma Linda, California. Yeah. Like, California. Why?
Yeah. So. They just decided, they made a leadership decision that they want to live better. And they drink, some of them drink some red wine, just in moderation, you know, to get the blood circulating, but nothing too overdoing it. Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody, once again, that listening to this, you can make the change and make the difference in yourself. And I think it's a mindset, both whether it be wealth building, health building, all of that. I believe, I don't know if you can agree, Paul, that it's really a mindset, changing your mind.
It is. That's exactly what it is. In fact, when you were mentioning health, wealth earlier, a part of that wealth is your health.
Mm-hmm.
We say your health is your wealth. I'll give you an example. I had a relative of mine. He was originally from Nigeria. He married one of our cousins. And she lived in Nigeria for about 35 years until they had an uprising over there. So she brought her kids back to Indianapolis. And he remained there because he headed up the highway department over there. He was a civil engineer from University of Purdue. Indiana, and they came up with the figure eights on the highway, his class. You know, entry ramps and exit ramps, all that, that's where it originated.
Wow.
And when he died, he was 62. He was worth $100 million. Yeah.
But the health?
And so, you know, what we want people to take from this is that you can have all the money in the world, but if you don't have good health, you'd rather have good health than to have $100 million.
Yeah.
Because you would have your life. And our greatest gift that we've ever given, Chuck, is our person, our being. That's the greatest gift we'll get. If we get a gift this Christmas or give a gift, that's just a bonus. But each one of our lives, you can't even put a dollar amount on it. It's just worth that much. Even if it's a poor person, their life, what we call poor, their life is, you can't put a price on it.
Yeah, and that kind of brings me back to the full circle of saying, you know, wealth is an individual thing. It's not necessarily the amount of money you have in your pocket, but like you're saying, Paul, we do need money to make our necessary purchases. But $1 million for you might make you happy, and you say, I'm wealthy. I might say, you know what? I got $100,000. I'm feeling really good. I'm I got my health.
Yeah,
I like it. So. Yeah.
And I read this book years ago. I'll never forget it. It was called The Neighbor Next Door. A couple of gentlemen out of the Georgia area wrote this book because they had interviewed a lot of wealthy people, monetarily wealthy people. And people think, well, you know, the wealthy people are behind a gated community. And they were like, no, they aren't. They're in regular neighborhoods. Do they each drink champagne? No, if they happen to drink, they drink a beer. If they go to a social setting in the evening, do they want hors d'oeuvres and caviar? No, they want a club sandwich, right? Mm-hmm. Do they buy new clothes every other week? No, they get their shoes, they resole them, or they get their clothes altered, right? So the myth of a person being wealthy, that they, what we see on television or movies, mostly, it's just people who like to spend a lot of money. And oftentimes what we find is we see someone with a really nice vehicle, we're like, wow, they got it made. No, they're in debt, unless they pay cash, right? And we know some people can pay cash, we know that. But typically, our assumptions of what we see in social media or what we see on television and movies, and I tell people, I said, well, yeah, that's a movie. Right, people don't live like that. Rich people don't live like that. You have Warren Buffett. He lives in a house he bought, I think, in 1958, 1959 with his wife. He lives in the same house. He has the same car. He gets his car fixed. He doesn't go and get anything new. This is what Warren Buffett brags about, Chuck. He's got a McDonald's gold card where he can get free McDonald's food. So he goes to China with Bill Gates. And Bill Gates, he tells Bill Gates, I'm going to take you out to dinner. So they go to, I want to go to McDonald's in China. They say, well, in China, we don't accept that. We can't give you free food with that card in China. You do that in the United States. I said, now, to me, that's just the most beautiful story I've ever heard. Now, this man, you know, Warren Buffett has been one of the richest people monetarily in the world for years. But he's showing us an example. He's giving away his money to worthy causes. Bill Gates giving away his money to worthy causes and a whole lot of other ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they know what's important in life.
Well, yeah. I just want
other people.
Yeah. And I want to add one thing before we close out, and I want you to add something as well. But my thinking is, and you touched on this, and part of the wealth and health is also socializing. Yes. You don't want to isolate yourself.
Correct.
You know, so... don't do that. Get out there. And you even mentioned friends, and, you know, friends influence other friends on how they eat and what they eat sometimes. So be that influencer and, you know, change your mindset as far as your health and wealth goes. I hope I didn't take anything away, but
Paul,
What do you have to tell us here before we close out? You know, let us know once again where they can find your book, the name of your book, sure. And then your Wealth Building Academy, all of that stuff.
Sure. And thanks for asking, Chuck. And first of all, before I do that, I just want to thank you again for extending the invitation for me to be the guest on your show. It's just an honor. And I rave, and my friends at the summit raved about Chuck Tuck. We were like, we need more Chuck Tucks in the world. Because your energy just exuded, and we loved every minute of it. We all did.
Well, thank you.
But my book is titled is Leadership as Influence, a three-pronged approach to becoming a leader of influence. You can find it at also on my website at www.leadershipisinfluencebook.com. And out there, you can sign up and you'll receive a free book on a mindset, a growth mindset, because that's what we all need. And because it's not talking about a scarcity mindset, it's the opposite. So a growth mindset is the opposite of a scarcity mindset. So I feel that this particular book, ebook, that you can get free by going to my website, and that will also get you started in terms of thinking. And what I want to share with everyone listening right now, I want to go right back to what Chuck was talking about earlier. We're social beings as a part of our construct, meaning that God created us to connect with each other, no matter where we are on the planet, no matter what ethnic group you're from, no matter what community you're from, God created us all as one. He didn't create us to be different by any stretch of the imagination, because we're made in His image and His likeness, and we are a temple. So I want to encourage people, our seniors who are out there, family may not visit, go visit the seniors. If you see a child that you know coming from a family that doesn't have as much as you, buy them a gift for Christmas. But get into the community and connect. Go out and volunteer. I've volunteered for everything. Asian Pacific Heritage Week, Native American activities when I was in the military. I've kind of done it all because I found out that I love people. And that's what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to hate people, but we're supposed to love people and love our neighbor and just be good to people. One of the most important things that we can do in this world is to be kind to one another. Kindness is the greatest gift you can give someone. So when I go out to the grocery store and someone's coming out, their hands are full, I either help them, I open the door for them, whatever it takes. Good morning. No, it never hurts anyone to say good morning. And so just being nice, being kind, and our own initiative doing that makes the world a better place.
Yeah.
It actually does.
Makes it. Just go out there and be kind.
Yeah.
Pass that on.
Pass it on. Absolutely. Well, so thank you very much, Chuck.
Mr. Paul Lawrence Van, thank you. I really appreciate it today. I've learned, I've been inspired, and I'm ready to go out there and live life, a wealthy, healthy life.
Absolutely, my friend. Thank you so much, Chuck. And I would love to get you on my show one day as well.
Okay, we got a deal.